Light 104.7 and 1570 AM WVTL.
St. Mary's Healthcare Program on WVTL-FM. We welcome Rebecca Guarino, who's Director of Project Action, a Stop Smoking organization. How you doing, Rebecca?
I'm good, Bob. Thanks for having me this morning. I appreciate it.
Indeed. Always a pleasure. I did see a story in the news about, I think it was specifically Project Action, that you had approached the city of Gloversville about advertising of cigarettes in the city.
Of tobacco products. What happened is back in November, and I don't know, I think we sent you some information about this. Back in November, we had the Great American Smokeout, and we worked in partnership with the Glove Theater and some kids from Gloversville High School and Middle School, and we created a video, which we did a similar project last year. We did a new one this year. This year we focused more on, it's about tobacco advertising, but it had more of a humorous take on it than last year. Last year's video was more documentary in nature. And in November, I showed it to the Fulton County Youth Board and talked to them a little bit about tobacco advertising and the impact it has on youth. Robin Wentworth happened to be there. You know, she's a councilwoman on the Gloversville City Council. And she felt very strongly about the message that we had, which is kids start smoking because of tobacco advertising and the impact it has on them. They say that tobacco advertising has a bigger impact on youth even than peer pressure does. So she invited us to come speak to the council, and they drafted a resolution in support of doing something to reduce or eliminate tobacco advertising in the city so that kids aren't exposed to the advertising. Obviously, we're not trying to limit adults from being able to get the product because it's a legal product, but we know that the advertising impacts kids, not adults. Mm. It's kind of like wallpaper to adults. Like even like when you think about somebody who's a non-smoker, you go into a smoke shop or you go into a convenience store, and that kind of advertising doesn't make an impact
on you.
You're
absolutely right. You don't even know it's there.
You don't even notice it. But yeah. To a child, and a lot of the advertising, it looks almost like children's books. You know, if you go in, the bright colored letters and the bright signs all behind where the candy is and where the things that kids are interested in, like, you know, ice cream and Coca-Cola, and then there's this giant cigarette display where we know tobacco kills one in three of its users. So tobacco companies are marketing to children. We know that they're marketing to children even though they say that they're not, and that advertising is having a big impact on the smoking rate. Mm.
Now, I did see, and it was interesting you said that Robin Wentworth kind of brought that to the council, because I did see some of her comments in the Leader Herald story, and wasn't she wondering, I mean, what can they do? I mean, what will the city do? I mean, they can't ban the ads or anything, really, can they?
They can. They actually can. I don't think the city's going to take any more steps right now. We are really just using the resolution with advocacy. So we can say, you know, the city of Gloversville supports us in this public health mission, basically. But other countries are way ahead of the United States, and they have already completely covered up tobacco advertising. Actually, I wish I could show your viewers, but I have a picture of what some other countries have done. If you go to Canada, there is no tobacco advertising,
right,
which is our neighbor next door. And in the period that they covered up the tobacco advertising, it was a five-year period between, I've got my numbers here somewhere, I think it was between 2002 and 2007, the youth smoking rate went down 10% in 5 years, which is a staggering amount. I mean, to make that kind of a small change, it's not going to impact adult smokers. They can still get the legal product, tobacco. But to have the youth smoking rate decrease by 10% in 5 years, I mean, that's a huge jump in kids picking up a smoking habit. And I think... You know, it not only saves lives, but it saves taxpayer money, because a lot of Medicaid expenses come from tobacco-related illnesses and death.
So how will it be different in Gloversville as opposed to other cities that haven't instituted this now, if they aren't actually banning the ads?
They're not banning the ads, but, you know, we would like to see that happen eventually in New York State, obviously. After President Obama signed the Family Smoking Protection Act back in 2009, it gave municipalities, states, the ability to restrict the advertising and the place, sale, and manner, and the way that the tobacco is being advertised. So any municipality can say, you know, we're not going to sell tobacco within 1,000 feet of schools because we know that it's easier for kids to access, so we're going to get the tobacco sales away from schools. Or a city could say, we're going to ban all tobacco advertising so that you know, we can be responsible retailers and keep the advertising away from children. So when he signed that, it opened up some doors to at least try to protect kids from being impacted by that tobacco advertising.
I would think that, you know, if, for example, Gloversville or Amsterdam, whoever, would actually ban the advertising at the stores, that the tobacco companies or maybe the store organizations would go to court saying it's a First Amendment issue, and that ultimately would have to be decided by the federal courts. I mean, not that it couldn't happen. I mean,
yeah.
Certainly in
yeah.
this medium in which I work, we don't advertise because of federal rulings. We don't advertise cigarettes.
And they have seen some of that. But I know in Massachusetts, another way that a city or a municipality or a state could impact tobacco advertising and its effect on youth or adults who are trying to quit is to ban the sale of cigarettes in pharmacies, which makes sense because a pharmacy is a healthcare organization. In Massachusetts, they've already made those steps, and they haven't seen any legal action being taken in Massachusetts. The city of Boston has no tobacco advertising in their pharmacies, or no sale of tobacco in pharmacies. Mm-hmm. And all the municipalities across the state is kind of catching on like wildfire, and they're not selling tobacco in pharmacies anymore because it's a healthcare organization, or a healthcare certified site. So I think... You know, of course, there's going to be some questions about legal action. I haven't heard of any legal action in Canada that happened. Mm. Well, I know that the tobacco companies are fighting it in Great Britain and Ireland because they're also in the process of trying to cover the tobacco advertising. Mm. But the big question is, why are the tobacco companies fighting it? It's because they know sure. that 90% of their new customers are under the age of 18, because 90% of daily smokers start before the age of 18. So, you know, of course, they're going to fight it tooth and nail. But I know with pharmacies, we haven't seen that kind of opposition from the tobacco companies.
Have you approached, we've been talking about Gloversville, have you approached Amsterdam or, I don't know, towns in the area or Johnstown City and so forth?
We haven't. We are going to approach other towns, villages, cities, just to see if we can garner support. I don't think here with the financial situation in the counties, it's a good time to put any kind of restrictions on sure. to small business owners. So, you know, I'm proceeding with caution. Of course, our highest priority is to protect kids from mm-hmm. the tobacco industry. So, yes, we want to see that happen. But, you know, at the same time, we realize the state of the economy right now and are sensitive to that. So,
okay, Rebecca Guarino with us from Project Action. I should know. But tell us about Project Action. My understanding is you're basically a state-funded operation that works to stop or curtail smoking.
Yeah, we have been in business since 1994. We're a grant-funded New York State Department of Health program, and our goal is to systematically reduce the smoking rate and to reduce people's exposure to secondhand smoke in Hamilton, Fulton, and Montgomery counties. And we've done that through a lot of different initiatives in the last 15 years. Sister Rita Jean Dubray at St. Mary's started the program years and years ago before we had the Clean Indoor Air Act, which was instituted in 2003. And she used to, you know, go to the bars and go to the restaurants and talk to them about the Clean Indoor Air Act. When New York State instituted that, the smoking rate dropped dramatically. And we're kind of pushing for the same kind of social change. So the parks and playgrounds going tobacco-free, the public housing going tobacco-free, and those kind of little changes make a huge impact on the smoking rate, especially among kids. Mm-hmm. And I think, even though New York City's kind of controversial, it's a good example of how those kind of changes can impact the smoking rate, because I think it's in September they announced the smoking rate in New York City is somewhere around 14%.
And you mentioned that, you know, that you get grants from the state health department, but I gather with the current state budget, there's cuts to your program, I've heard that anti-smoking folks have been concerned about that.
There are, because the governor proposed a $5 million cut to the program statewide, which is a pretty substantial cut. I think in the last 3 years, they've cut our budget 50%. So we've had, I guess, a disproportionate amount of cuts in the last few years from the state. What we're concerned about is that we don't want to see more kids picking up smoking. We want to make sure that all of the cessation is available for adults who want to quit smoking. And we also want to make sure that those hard-hitting media campaigns that are pushing people to call the quit line are still being aired on television. So, you know, we don't want to see the program cut and have that make an impact on people's health in the community. We don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, the legislature will have to come back with their budget, and they'll reach a compromise. It's ironic at the same time that the governor is put in his budget an increase on cigar and tobacco tax. So he's raising taxes on loose tobacco and cigars by $18 million, or the revenue should be around $18 million, and then at the same time cutting the prevention by $5 million.
Now, you have several arguments, I would say, on your side of the table, but your financial argument, as I understand it, is that by cutting down the smoking rate, you're ultimately saving the state and society money by cutting down on the expenses of health care.
Yeah, and just Medicaid alone, New York State spends over $5 billion annually on tobacco-related health care expenses. So this is not, I mean, it impacts every single household, whether you smoke or not, because that amount of Medicaid expenses related to tobacco is astronomical. I think the estimate from Tobacco Free Kids said about $800 per tax-paying household in New York State that we're paying for tobacco-related illnesses.
9:17 is the time. Our guest from Project Action, an anti-smoking organization in Hamilton, Fulton, and Montgomery counties, is Rebecca Guarino. Our phone number, 684-0123. If you want to join in the conversation, 684-0123.
The new Light 104.7 and 1570 AM. WVTL.
There are relatively new ads on television. You mentioned them to me before we started, and when you mentioned them, I thought, oh, yeah. I honestly thought those were some of these ads were what was going to be cut with the budget cuts. But where are they coming from, these anti-smoking ads?
Those are coming from the Department of Health. Initially, the Department of Health had said they might be cutting the advertisements, but we know that they really do push people to call the quit line, to quit smoking. I think we ran some ads back in August and September, like about a man who couldn't swim anymore because he had a trach in his throat, and the calls to the quit line doubled that month. So they realized we can't.
Yeah.
You can't cut it because people won't call the quit line. So so the cuts are probably going to come from community programs.
When you say they're ads, I mean, honestly, I don't know. Maybe I should. I mean, I don't think we carry them here. But, I mean, the TV, radio stations get paid for carrying that? Is that the deal?
Yeah, they do.
Wow. Yeah. Now, I must say that, well, I mean, how do I couch this? Somebody I know used to smoke has stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these ads are effective because, you know, be watching a little TV sometimes with the person, this ad would come on, be very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's probably what you want to do.
That is what we want to do,
The current theme has to do, and I know just what you were talking about as soon as you said it, with, you know, because they've done an ad like this in the past, like, you know, and I've been in that situation where I'm waiting in a doctor's office for the knock, and then he comes in with or she comes in with the good news or the bad news. But now, well, tell us the ad, because you're probably quite familiar with it. How does it work?
This ad that just started?
Yeah.
A mother is in the doctor's office with the doctor. The doctor announces to her, I think there's a couple different diagnoses that he comes in and gives her. And then, you know, he says it's hard to hear it from the doctor. It's even harder to tell it to your children.
Hmm.
So, I mean, as a mother, I think that's very impactful, you know.
Because and then you see her telling the children. And I thought it was very kind of realistic. I mean, because, you know, the kids aren't going to jump up and down and scream and cry probably, but she just delivered one of those sort of like the kid, one of those teenage comments, something, you know.
Yeah.
But you could tell, oh my, she's thinking to herself, what does this mean?
And I think that the idea is smoking just doesn't affect you because people sometimes, you know.
Well, and also I was just hearing on the news, in fact it's on the news today, that there's some talk about kids and, you know, again, people who are concerned about rights, you know, the individual rights, but, you know, won't be upset with this concept. But the concept was they were going after, quote unquote, the fact that, you know, a lot of kids travel around with other kids and the other kids smoke. So even though they're not smoking, they're inhaling the smoke.
The secondhand smoke.
Because, you know, a car is a pretty enclosed space.
It is an enclosed space, yeah, definitely.
I don't know what you would do about that, but
they have laws in California that ban smoking in cars.
Period end.
I think we did ask that on a survey last year. I don't remember what the statistics were though. But yeah, there is legislation in California banning smoking in cars with children. I think any under the age of 18, because you see a lot of people smoking with their infant car seat in the back too. Sometimes, you know.
Sure. Rebecca Guarino with us from Project Action. Another kind of question about the organization. What is your relationship to St. Mary's Healthcare?
We are a Department of Health grant-funded program, but St. Mary's Healthcare is my oversight agency. So we're based at St. Mary's Healthcare, but we're not funded by the hospital. We're funded by the Department of Health. So I answer to St. Mary's, but I also answer to New York State.
And St. Mary's, as I would say by now, most hospitals, maybe all hospitals, I mean, have gone through this process of banning smoking on their property, right?
Yeah, a lot of hospitals have tobacco-free campuses now. It is a little bit of a transition, especially for hospitals that cater to people with mental health issues, because over 50% of
sure.
patients who have mental health issues tend to be also addicted to tobacco. So it can be a challenge, but at the same time, it really is the best thing for public health, because you have people going in and out of the hospital who are suffering from lung cancer or COPD or emphysema who don't need to be breathing in the secondhand smoke, or even asthma, you know, or children who are just coming in and out of the hospital. So it's a very important step to take for healthcare organizations. I really feel like every primary care should have a tobacco-free policy on the grounds, every hospital.
Because this just came up the other day in conversation. I remember, and it was, I'll come to think of it, it was some years ago, but I remember an older family member of mine was treated by a physician who died of lung cancer.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was almost yep. like they didn't keep it a secret, kind of, but I remember he was sort of in the hospital and in a room way off in the back, and, you know, because he was, you know, in a long-term relationship as a doctor with my aunt, you know, we quote-unquote got to see him, and it was just so sad. I mean, here he, and apparently, he, you know, he would hide this, as you would. You know, I know
oh, yeah.
a lot of people are... Do you think there are a lot of secret smokers out there, or what do you think?
You know, it's hard to tell. I think a lot of people keep it a secret from their doctors, whether
yes.
it's a secret or not. I did recently read an article about a woman who had a heart attack who was relatively young, about 50 years old, and she had lost all this weight and was exercising every day, but she was a closet smoker. So, you know, people really do need to think about the fact that their smoking habit is constricting all of their blood vessels, and you're much more likely, even if you're breathing secondhand smoke in your home, you're much more likely to have a heart attack than if you're not, because those chemicals cause all of your blood vessels to constrict.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope there's not closet smokers, but I'm sure that a lot of people are not being completely upfront with their physicians when they're meeting one-on-one with them. And that's probably the most important person you should be sharing that information with.
Mm.
So,
well, you just don't want to hear the lecture.
Yeah, yeah, definitely don't want to hear the lecture, but it's one of the best things you can do for your health immediately. Within 20 minutes, you can see the positive health benefits of quitting smoking. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've seen it with people who smoke. You know, they and it's such a change in your life, really, because, you know, everything kind of revolves around smoking. You know, in a way. I mean, maybe for other people, everything revolves around drinking or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yep.
I mean, you plan your day figuring when you're going to get your cigarette breaks in.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing I've been thinking about lately, because I'm pregnant, I'm going to have a baby in a few months, is deep breathing. I went to a seminar about smoking cessation maybe 2 years ago, and she said one of the things that smokers don't even realize that has a real cathartic or therapeutic effect on them is the deep breathing. Because
mm-hmm.
smoking, you think of it as the addiction, you think of it as tobacco, but really taking that slow breath in and out is so it's so peaceful. It brings someone so much peace. And to learn to be able to do that without having the cigarette in your mouth, it's just a great habit to start. I think that's part of why people feel like cigarettes are calming them down. It's because you're outside just taking a deep breath for a couple of minutes, you know? But the chemicals in the cigarette are obviously causing more problems than it's worth. So it's just something I've been thinking about lately.
Okay. Rebecca Guarino joins us from Project Action. We were chatting before we started that your agency deals primarily with adults.
We do. I do work with youth. You know, they added that to my work plan this year. The Department of Health did. So I do work with youth, but Catholic Charities has a program called Reality Check, and they have a youth group that is specifically created to work with youth to help them advocate for themselves against the tobacco industry. So they'll do things like the day I went to go speak to the Gloversville Common Council, they were out in Albany at Legislative Day, meeting with the legislators, letting them know that they felt like this issue was important to them and they didn't want to see their friends starting to smoke or their parents smoke and they want to see their parents quit. Or, you know, so it's a great opportunity for kids who are under the age of 18, I think between 13 and 18, to be involved in advocacy. It also can be a good opportunity for kids to get involved in government or to have a reference for college applications, that kind of thing.
Mm. But again, it must be hard to reach teens, is it not?
It is, and I think the hardest group that we're trying to reach right now is the poorer communities, yeah. The low socioeconomic status communities.
Sure.
Those are really the people that are the most difficult to reach partially because smoking is so much a part of the culture. Mm. For people who have less education, the smoking rate is much higher than someone who has a master's degree or a bachelor's degree even. Someone who has just a GED. A few years ago I saw a statistic that said someone who has a GED, the smoking rate is 50% among people who just have GEDs. So, you know, those are the people that we're really trying to reach with some of these policy changes, with eliminating the tobacco advertising, with getting rid of the smoking in the parks and playgrounds.
Well, just trying to get my head around that concept, and I think you're right. It almost reminds me in an odd way of how much smoking went on, let's say, in World War II.
Yeah.
Because, you know, soldiers in World War II, they were smoking because they could be blown up in 10 minutes. You know.
Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah, we'll worry
Absolutely.
About this later. And I think with our lower socioeconomic groups and or poor people, to put maybe a more common word on it, they're more likely to be in a dangerous situation, let's say, with violence or crime in their neighborhoods and so forth. So the smoking just seems to be kind of a far away kind of issue that they don't have time to be concerned with, and it feels good.
That's right. And I think, you know, I'd mentioned mental health patients earlier. I think that's another thing with mental health patients, too. There's so many other issues they have to deal with every single day that smoking sinks to the bottom of the list. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you think about quality of life as they get older, when you think about the fact that 1 out of 3 smokers die of tobacco-related illness, like, I want to see, you know, everybody take charge of their own health and say, okay, I want to live the best life I absolutely can. Every day is a gift. I don't want to waste a single day. And smoking, it's a terrible addiction. It's very difficult to quit. It's not easy. But, I hope as the new year comes, the new year has come, that people will be able to find some motivation to try to quit smoking. And the other thing is, too, that when people start before the age of 18, you know, when you're 14, 15 years old, you don't have the capacity to think, oh, if I start smoking now when I'm 65, I might have COPD. Like, you're not thinking that when you're 15 years old. Mm-hmm. So that's why tobacco companies do try to hook kids when they're young.
Rebecca Guarino, Project Action, I thank you for joining us, unless there's something else you wanted to bring up this morning.
No, thank you for having me. If anybody would like more information, I do have a website. It's www.projectactionhfm.org. HFM is for Hamilton, Fulton, and Montgomery. And I'm based at St. Mary's Healthcare in Amsterdam. And my phone number is 841-7123.
Well, always a pleasure to talk with you, Rebecca, and good luck with your pending blessed event.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.